It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Booyah. Man, it's good to have you guys here on Money for Lunch. Money for Lunch tribe, Money for Lunch nation, Money for Lunch community. You know, I don't know, just trying to figure out a nice little, what do you call it, war cry, if you will. All right, well, welcome to Money for Lunch. I am your host, Bert Martinez. This is the place to find out what's going on with you and your business. This is the place to get better ideas, get inspired, get some new strategies, be able to change the way you think, the way you live. And we're going to start it off today with our regular contributor, Norm Blumenthal. Is an attorney for workers and consumers, selected as one of the top attorneys in Southern California. He's, as I mentioned, a regular contributor. He's a guy who is helping change the way workers are treated, and I respect what him and his firm has accomplished. This is the guy who's looking out for working class tips all over America. Norm Blumenthal, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks, Bert. Nice to be here. It's time to make money for your listeners. If you don't want to raise, anybody here that doesn't want to raise, I want you to change the channel right now. If you want to raise, listen up, and we're going to go out and tell you how to do it. Today,
all right, let's talk about this. Go ahead. Tell us how to do it.
Okay. Today's Super Tuesday. Okay?
Yes.
If you're in a Super Tuesday state, you need to vote for higher wages. Now, how do you vote for higher wages? You vote for a Democrat. It's a real easy thing to do. All Republicans across the board, every one of them, want lower wages. So, Trump is just saying what they all think. The Republican Party is now led by Trump. The Republican Party, as a result, is now the last bastion for angry whites who cannot accept the fact that America is a country of immigrants. We're all descendants of immigrants. I don't know anybody. Raise your hand. Turn off. Raise your hand if you are not a descendant of immigrants, because we all are.
Right.
In this country now, and we all have to accept the fact, it's multiracial, it's multiethnic, it's multireligious, it's multicultural, and it's multisexual. This is why Trump is winning. He's a demagogue. He speaks hatred. He's Hitler-esque. If you know your history, this is how Hitler got started, speaking hate speech. And this is something that should not happen in America. We should all fear what he's doing, because he's going to send our soldiers off to foreign wars. He's against higher wages. And it's pathetic that he's going to win the Republican nomination. So if you receive a paycheck and you want a raise, you need to vote for people that are going to give you a raise, and you need to vote for Democrats. So we talked about before, American business is an adversary system. Management, as is their right, wants to pay as little as possible for labor and wants laws that allow lower wages. Labor, who we represent, who I represent, who all you working stiffs in America are, labor wants and needs higher wages. We all want higher wages. You're entitled to higher wages. And starting with higher minimum wages. Remember, a rising tide floats all ships. You got to start with the bottom and build up. And we also need these new overtime rules that President Obama has put into place, but may not become effective unless a Democrat is put in the White House. These rules.
Before you go on, he put these rules into effect, but what happens? Why will they not become effective? What's holding, what's stopping these changes from being effective? Explain that real quick.
Okay. What's happening is that there is now the Department of Labor has offered up what's called regulations to change the overtime rules. And what it does is it's changed. Right now, there's a threshold salary of $23,660 a year, where anybody working over that amount doesn't have to be paid overtime if they're classified as exempt for administrative and executive or professional exemption. President Obama wants to raise that amount to $50,440. And what he did is he put into effect what are called regulations. And this will take 13.5 million workers. They will be entitled to receive overtime pay that are not receiving it. And that's a huge number because they're working, these workers are working 50, 60 hours a week, not receiving overtime pay. And as a result, the companies have to hire less people to do the work. If these new overtime rules go into effect, companies are going to force to hire more people and pay greater wages. What they're trying to do is take this away. There's a what's called the Congressional Review Act, and it dictates that all major rules are delayed for 60 legislative days after they're submitted for the process. And right now, the Labor Department has not submitted it, and Congress will be entitled to reverse this critical need if a Democrat is not reelected to the White House. That's what it looks like is going to happen. And we'll be back where we started as far as the federal wages go. We got a $7.25 federal minimum wage. And there's still a lot of states in the country that follow this. This is pathetic. And it's nobody can live on $7.25 an hour. And guess who picks up the difference? All the taxpayers. All the working staff. You not only have to live on your salary, but your taxes go to subsidize for food stamps and Section 8 housing and Medicaid for everybody else who's receiving these low minimum wages because we can't get the wages up with the Republicans in office. It's not going to happen, folks. And I hate to tell you this, but if you vote for a Republican, you're voting for lower wages for yourself, lower wages for your neighbor, and at the end of the day, a lower economy. At the end, what happens is when you have higher wages, you put more money into American consumers' pocket who are going to spend it. You need the money in the hands of the working stiffs. I guarantee you, everybody out there listening today, it's a working stiff, you give him an extra $20,000 a year, he's going to spend it. And that's what we're trying to do. The billionaire and the millionaire, you give him an extra $20,000 a year, he's not going to spend it. It's going to go into the bank. And right now, there's so much money in banks in this world, in this country, that they're paying negative interest rates. They don't even want your money anymore.
And so I want to make this clear because a lot of people don't understand this. So what Norm is saying, everybody, for those who aren't clear, is, look, you give somebody an extra $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and depending on their circumstance, if you're like us, you're going to spend that money. You're going to pay off college. You're going to maybe pay off some debt. You're going to buy stuff that you need. Maybe repair your home. Maybe get a new car. That money goes right back into the economy, which stimulates the economy, which stimulates growth, which creates more jobs. You see how that works. Now you give that same $10,000 or $20,000, $30,000. To a wealthy individual who's already got everything, that money doesn't do anything. It sits there parked, and it doesn't help our economy. Go ahead.
That's right, because there's so much money now sitting on the sidelines. And in order to get the money back in the game, you have to change the laws that management, that force business to get the money back in the game. It's all on the sidelines now, and the best way to put the money back in the game is not by handing it out through government with government subsidies. The best way to get the money back in the game is to increase wages for people that work and force management to hire more people to work the hours that they need to get the job done. It's a very simple way to do it, and it can be done, and it's the Democrats' way of doing it. The Republicans' way of doing it is put more money in the hands of the rich and then let them decide what they want to do with it. That's not going to work.
And here's the reason why. Listen, look, the rich, you have to understand this, and it's nothing wrong. It's just the way the system is set up. The people who tend to make the rules, excuse me, are the people who have the money to influence lobbyists, to influence Congress people, to influence politicians. And if you give, you know, so you give that money to somebody, that's most likely what they're going to do. That's why the Republicans tend to, you know, give the money to the wealthy, because the wealthy give the money to them. So it's a cycle that goes round and round. And so when you see something that strikes you as weird, maybe a weird law, a law that doesn't make sense, like corn subsidies, you know, there's no reason for wealthy farmers to receive subsidies from the government to raise corn. But they do that. Why? Because they have the wealth and the power to create laws that support their industry. We just, you know, we just try to make a more of a fair playing field.
Right. And you need a pathway. You need a pathway to get the hands and the money of the working stiffs of America. And it's not going to happen when you go out and everybody vote. I want everybody to vote today. Voting's the most important thing you can do as a citizen. But in voting, vote for a Democrat, you know, because they're the guy that's going to put more money in your pocket. And they're the ones that are going to give a pathway, for example, to pay off the student loans. There's three things that are laws that are sitting in Congress today that can't pass with a Republican Congress. One is to allow companies that hire you to pay off your student loan without that money being income to you, and it allows it to be an expense to them. Two, it changes the amortization schedule, where when you pay off the loan, you're paying off principal first and then interest, which cuts the cost by 40%. And three, there's no prepayment penalty. These are kind of pathways. Another pathway is all these veterans that have come back that have served this country and are protecting this country, why can't they, like the senior citizens, be on Medicare? You don't have to have everybody on Medicare. But here, look at the vets. The Veterans Administration is a mess. They have all this bloated federal government that doesn't work. There's no reason to disband it. It serves a good purpose, but at the same time, allow the vets of our country to be in Medicare. Why not? It's a beautiful thing. It works for senior citizens. Why can't it work for our vets? They're as important or more important in the time they've put in defending this country to receive something special. That helps them, it helps us, it helps the country. These are the kind of ideas that the Democrats have. But the Republicans are bankrupt. They are so bankrupt that they're going to put up for office a demagogue. You know, this is who they're putting up. All he talks is hate. You know what the Beatles said in Revolution, when you ask for money with a person with minds that hate, I got to tell you, brother, you have to wait. don't be misled by this guy. Look at what his head looks like. He's got that crazy swirl. I wouldn't trust anybody with a swirl.
You know, his hair aside, Mr. Trump has, I think you hit the nail right on the head. He is focusing a lot on fear. He's talking about making America great, and it's so interesting that you mention this Hitler analogy, because that's what Hitler said. We're going to make Germany great again. Why?
Exactly.
I mean, how? Well, first of all, we're going to, you know, we're going to pick specific groups. In this case, back then, Hitler started blaming everything on the Jews and the Jewish religion, and we all know what happened there. Now, you know, now you see Trump almost doing the exact same thing. He's talking about making America great, but he's using hate and fear-mongering to do it. So is that to me is not getting people to work. That to me is not making America great. You know, if you really want to make America great, let's get people working. Let's start with innovation. Let's start reducing some corporate taxes so we can get people so we can get more companies moving to America versus leaving America. If you want to make America great, let's start by taking care of its citizens, so the citizens can then also take care of the country. It's one of those things. You know, a long time ago, JFK said, do not time to have America help its citizens out. You know, this thing with the wages. Let me tell you, to me, there's nothing worse than to see somebody who's working two or three jobs, literally working two jobs, and still can't pay its pay their bills. They still have to have government subsidies. We have the same scenario with our fighting men and women. Some of, here are women, men and women who are laying their life on the line, and even with government housing, I mean base housing, military housing, they cannot make ends meet. You know, and so when I think of higher wages, I want higher wages, not just for our, you know, not just for our citizens, but also for our military folks. I mean, this is something that to me is personal because there's a lot of people that are suffering working two jobs. I mean, they're literally working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And guys, if you're making $8 an hour, $9 an hour, and you're working 60 hours a week, it's a, and that's two, over two different jobs, you're not getting overtime. So it's just impossible to make ends meet. If you do the math, even in a place like, let's say, Texas, which has, a smaller cost of living, you still need about $36,000 a year for a single person to live there and pay bills. Forget it if it's a single person with a child. Now you're looking at $50,000 just to break even. That doesn't include an emergency or having savings. Higher wages is going to give everybody a bump. It's going to get people off the government payrolls, subsidy payrolls. It's going to get people off welfare. It's going to boost self-esteem. It's going to build confidence. It's going to help everybody. Anyway, I didn't mean to rant there. I just
No, you're right, Bert. You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm, you know, you're totally on board with this. And the important thing everybody's got to know is the idea of velocity of money. We, you know, we've talked about this before, but the more you spend, the better America gets. Right now, we've got $19 trillion in debt that this country has that is the equal to our gross domestic product for a year. I mean, it's a huge, huge number, and that's not going to come down if we keep having government subsidies because the corporations of America are not paying their fair share by paying what a laborer is entitled to. The cost of labor needs to go up. The payment for labor needs to go up, and it has to go into the American's pocket. Once it does that, once that money starts to get back into the system, it's spent in America, the velocity of that money increases. It's turned over not one time, but two times, but three times or four times in a year. You'll get the money going up, and the man making the money, he will pay taxes instead of taking money out of government. And we can get ourselves, if we have a good Congress and a good president, we can get ourselves out of all these foreign wars and reduce our defense spending. That defense spending is 60% of our budget. The rest of it's only 40%, all of it combined. So there's a real need here to have somebody in there that's going to examine our defense budget. Every Republican wants to expand the defense budget. They want to spend more on the military. How much do we have to spend? How many bad foreign wars do we have to get into before they realize we're not going to make a change? These people have to fight it out for themselves. And in the meantime, we got to build America to make America great again and pay down our debt or at least not go deeper into debt and right. Make this country great by people getting back to work and getting higher salaries. And the only way to do that, folks, I just hate to tell you, is when you go to the ballot box, you got to vote for a Democrat. If you're voting for a Republican, you're voting against yourself, unless you're a millionaire. Anybody that's listening that's a millionaire, a billionaire, I want all of you to vote for Republicans because they're the ones that are going to protect your money. But if you're not a millionaire or a billionaire and you want to raise and you want to make more money for your family and you want to get people off the government dole and you want to balance the budget, you got to vote for a Democrat.
All right, Norm Blumenthal, we're out of time. Always good to have you on the show, my friend. Looking forward to talking politics with you here. We have a phenomenal year coming up, watching things unfold. And anyway, we'll have you back soon to talk.
All right, we'll see you, Bert. Thank you.
All right, you bet. Good stuff there from Norm Blumenthal. Listen, Norm's a small business operator. I'm a small business operator. We're not trying to shoot ourselves in the foot. Sometimes You know, and this is coming from people like Warren Buffett. You know, Warren Buffett is in favor of raising the minimum wage. Sometimes you got to think outside of yourself and just do what's right. It's a little painful sometimes, but, you know, sometimes when we stretch ourselves and we get out of our comfort zone, we all grow. Quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty. Let's get back into it. My next guest, Ryan Jeffrey and Armand Ghosh. Collectively, Ryan and Armand have started a dozen companies and advise hundreds of entrepreneurs. They build businesses that solve real-world problems and equip entrepreneurs with the knowledge and guidance to succeed. Ryan has worked in both venture capital and as an operator, and Armand has built and led some of the fastest growing sales and ops teams. They've been working together for the last 5 years behind the scenes of major companies, helping to launch Belly and More, recently founding 11 Ronin. Ryan Jeffrey and Armand Ghosh, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, don't. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's start off. What the heck is happening? What is 11 Ronin? Tell us a little bit about that and what you guys built there.
Yeah, good question. So we're building an ecosystem here that supports entrepreneurs and provides the ability for entrepreneurs to build companies in a more successful way. So we launched 11 Ronin about a year and a half ago after starting a couple of successful businesses ourselves, really because we wanted to tilt the pendulum back in the favor of the entrepreneur and provide resources, guidance, support, and advice for entrepreneurs so they can do a better job of succeeding and giving them the tools that they need in order to grow their companies in a more scalable fashion.
Cool. All right, great. And so just out of curiosity, I got to ask you this. 11 Ronin, where did that title or that name come from?
So the name just came from the founding team thinking about who we were. We've worked for a number of different companies in the past. And when you think about the word Ronin, it's a masterless samurai. Basically, it's someone who's going in and operating on their own. And for us, the essence of that is simply that we are in control of what we're doing, and we want to make sure that the impact that we create is driven from, you know, the group of people that we've assembled to accomplish that and not have to, work for someone else.
Gotcha. I love it. All right. So let's talk about this. Since you guys have this entrepreneurial background, you've worked with dozens of companies, hundreds of entrepreneurs, how do you build a sustainable, lasting business that really solves real-world problems? Kind of walk me through some of the basics.
Yeah, so it's a really good question. Obviously, it's a complex answer, but we'll start with the fundamentals, and I think that begins by thinking about a problem, right? I think a lot of people, when they first start a business or think about growing a company, they have an end goal in sight. They have something that they want to shoot for, and that's fine and well, but really what you want to be doing is thinking about it from, okay, what is the problem that we want to solve? What is it that we're going out and we're actually doing that creates value for people, that solves some sort of innate problem that drives material impact. And when you start with that as a fundamental pillar for the business, then everything else flows from that. You're able to go out and communicate that more successfully to customers. You're able to scale that in a more sustainable way when you start with that problem from the ground floor. So that's what we think about at 11 Ronin. When we start the companies that we do here, we started, by the way, 7 companies now in the past year and a half and raised about $5 or $6 million for those companies. We start with the problem, and we start fundamentally with how do we solve that problem in the most scalable way possible, and then we grow it from there. And that's where we start with every company that we have.
And, you know, and I want to kind of focus on that a little bit. You know, all of us inherently try to avoid problems. There's a knee-jerk reaction that, oh, problems are bad, we want to avoid problems. But as an entrepreneur, problems are a good thing, because as you solve these problems, you build wealth. You build, you know, you get people to work for you. You have this, you're having an impact on these real-world problems, as we're talking about. You know, look at Airbnb. They started with a problem, and their problem was, they needed to raise some money to pay rent, is the way the story goes. And so it just so happens that in San Francisco, they're having this major conference, and they put out a couple ads on Craigslist if somebody wanted to sleep on their couch. And before you knew it, they had the couch rented. They had a couple of air mattresses rented. And there goes Airbnb gets launched, and they realize not only is this problem solvable by doing this service, but other people think the way they thought, that, man, I'd rather pay $25 for a couch than $350 for a hotel room. And you know, then you look at some of the biggest companies in the world. They really do solve problems. Apple solves problems. To this day, I remember, the iPod. When the iPod came out, and you see that guy dancing and he's jamming, and this is an old commercial, but this is when it first was unveiled. The thought of having 1,000 of your favorite songs in your pocket and not having to carry CDs and not having to worry about breaking your CDs, that solved the problem. And from there, you know, they've gone on to solve all the problems. So as entrepreneurs, you know, Armin and Ryan, we are problem solvers. That's what we do. Otherwise, we don't make
money. Absolutely. I mean, a good way to look at it is if you can identify a problem and you truly are looking to find the solution, in many respects, that's what defines opportunity, right?
Yes.
If there is no problem, then there's no need for a solution. Therefore, you know, you're not really building anything. So, with that, I think you've got to be very confident that, one, you have to find a problem that you're passionate about. Two, with that passion, in order to be a successful entrepreneur, you know, we always talk about it internally, you've got to be committed to finding that solution and then hopefully solving what that problem is. And that is very difficult, right? The harder the problem, probably the bigger the opportunity. But, with it, it's not supposed to be easy. So there is, as an entrepreneur, this sense of commitment that also has to be on your part to really follow through that, you know, makes it so difficult. That's why 99% of startups fail. It's because, it's not easy.
Well, that's right. It's not easy. If it was, then, you know, the value would be gone. If you look at the world's biggest problems today, and let's focus in the healthcare industry with disease. If you could solve cancer, that's a big problem. It would probably return a lot of value to you. The diabetes is another one, there's tons of them, big health problems that could be solved. Let me ask you guys this, because you guys kind of alluded to this earlier, but what is your take? Why do you think, or let me rephrase it like this, do you think that there's a lot of entrepreneurs that chase money? In other words, they get into business for the wrong reasons. They think that they're getting in to make money versus solving problems. Do you see that a lot? Do you think that's the reason why so many companies failed?
Yeah, I mean, we do. I think that is, I think when companies do fail, there is that fundamental root cause of, well, the entrepreneur isn't necessarily focused on on solving that innate issue that they went out to solve, right? And when you have that as your fundamental initiative, when you start, you don't stop regardless of what happens. And I think when you're just focused on making money, look, starting a company, as Armand mentioned, is tough. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs. There's going to be a lot of things that go wrong on the path towards success. And if you get bogged down because you aren't making money right off the bat, you're quickly going to change course and you're going to fail. But if you can stay persistent, if you can persevere through that because you care so much about solving that one cause, if you care so much about curing cancer or whatever it is that you're out to solve that you're passionate about, you're going to stay with that. You're going to stick with it through the ups and downs, and you're going to have a much better chance of success. So to answer your question, I think it's certainly clear that, you know, some of the entrepreneurs that we talk to, and this is how we try to position 11 Ronin and why the entrepreneurs that we talk to, when we talk to them, we care only about one thing. We care about the fact that they're passionate about solving that problem that they set out to solve. And if they're doing that, success will come and things will flow from that. But absolutely, I think that's the fundamental issue that you need to start with when you go out and start a company is let's solve that one problem and then grow it from there.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, let's talk about this real quick, Armand. You have a acronym, TRUST. Talk about TRUST.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to being an entrepreneur, you're naturally going to be a leader. You're putting yourself into an environment where, you know, like we've identified in this conversation, you're going to really be the champion of a problem, and you're going to build out the team that's going to hopefully solve that problem. Now, with that, there's a responsibility for you to be able to effectively get the people around you not only excited about this problem, but to also work with you to find that solution. Because, you know, I'm a true believer that at the end of the day, the best companies, they've identified that problem, but they've also identified the team that will be able to solve that problem, and it's certainly not one person by any means. So TRUST to me is an acronym that is the way that I think about being a good leader and what you need to embody in terms of qualities to be able to effectively manage not only your own expectations, but take on the responsibility of the people who are looking to you as that, and their leader to take them to the finish line and hopefully win that race.
Yeah, all right. So what does TRUST stand for real quick? How do you use that acronym?
So it starts with T. You know, I think every single leader who has had the opportunity to have a team has understood that if they invest in their own, they will probably reap the biggest returns. So it's not something where you just look at your employees as numbers or as dollar signs. The more that they develop, the more that you get in return. So there is this sense of investment that I think every single leader needs to make into their employees, and I think that starts with teaching. And the R stands for being responsible and reliable. So that's one thing that I think gets a little bit gray for a lot of leaders in the sense that what is your motive? And is your motive selfish for yourself or is your motive for the collective good? And with that, I think being reliable is something that speaks volumes for people who are looking to follow someone because that's what really I think will embody trust in the long term because they don't have the volatility that you may have if you're not going to be having that track record that someone can say, okay, this is someone who knows what they're doing, but I also know that when they do it, they will actually have an outcome that I can be confident will be one that's going to benefit me. Unique, that's the you part of this. You know, every great leader that I know is someone who's really unique to themselves. You know, they've got their own quirks. They're not trying to copy, mimic, or be someone else that they're not, and, you know, they'll harness that sense of unique and use it to their advantage. You look at, you know, some of the biggest leaders, that are household names, Steve Jobs is one that always comes to the top of the list. You know, he was a very unique person, but part of him was that, you know, kind of Steve Jobs mentality that was only his and his alone, which
right.
people would naturally gravitate towards. Then the rest
and
are
you know what? And let me,
I want to
talk about this real quick about Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs had a reputation for being a hard ass, right? He was not necessarily an easy person to work for. So the people that hung around him really, you know, were okay with how difficult he was or how challenging he could be, right? So I'm throwing that out there because a lot of people think that, you know, you have to, you know, that you cannot be your authentic self. Steve Jobs was a very, you know, tough individual to work for, is what I understand. He had high standards and he expected a lot from people. But yet,
yeah.
you know, look what he did. And so I'm just saying that because, again, you can be who you are and you will find a team that will gravitate towards you. Go on.
Yeah, absolutely. So the acronym stands for Teacher Reliable, Unique, Successful, and Tested. The last two, Successful and Tested. You know, success is not measured by how many dollars you have in your bank account. I think for great leaders, success is something that they seek out in everything they do, whether it's waking up and, you know, going to the gym, whether it's going to a meeting and being on point for that meeting, or it's going and actually having that outcome for a business. It's the little things that you look at that actually roll up the greater kind of wins that you have. And tested, you know, I think every great leader is not afraid to put themselves in a position where, you know, they're putting themselves up against the world, you know. And every great leader has their war stories. They have their scars. And, you know, for someone who's been there, done that, that can give a lot of confidence to people when they're trying to make their own decisions on what to do. So, you know, one thing, you know, the trust aspect of it, I think, all loops back to, as a leader, if you look at your own employees or your own management team, you know, if they can confidently say they trust you, you're doing it right. And if they don't, it's not necessarily the end of the world, but you have to understand that that is what's going to get the best out of your employees. And if there is a lack of trust, at some point in time, there's going to be a crack in that foundation, which could bring the whole house down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And interestingly enough, we've seen some great companies who get destroyed, not for any other reason than character flaws. You know, you look at Enron. Enron was this multi-billion-dollar company, but it was all fake. It was all built on a house of cards, right? There was all this, all this fraud. And eventually it collapsed, right? So, you know, again, there's a complete difference there. When you know, I like that trust acronym, especially so it is so, apropos for something like Enron. You know, they didn't really put their team first, right? They were just concerned about themselves. And so eventually Enron collapsed or imploded because of all the fraud. And so a business... you know, again, your leaders don't have to be perfect, but obviously fraud is something that we all need to avoid. Lying to your team, lying to the public, all this stuff eventually catches up with all of us. We see it. It may, you know, you not get caught for 5 or 10 or 15 years, but eventually you get caught. And so I think that to me is, you know, when you're talking about some of these leadership issues, that's kind of, you know, to me a glowing example of how not to build a company, right? I mean, this is exactly the antitrust version of what you're talking about, sort of.
Yeah.
One thing I'll quickly add to that, I think to expand on Armand's point as well and to what you just talked about as you're mentioning that, one thing that came to mind is a lot of these companies get in trouble because, quite frankly, they aren't putting their customers first as well, right? And any successful company that you look at, anyone that is returning shareholder value, puts their customers in the front of every decision that they make. And I think that when we start companies ourselves and when we're going out, before we even build a product, we talk to hundreds and hundreds of the target audience of the customers that we think are going to buy that product. And when companies get into hot water, it's because they aren't putting their customers first. So you look at what the Apple is, you mentioned Apple earlier, you look at what Apple is going through right now with the federal government, they're putting their customers first. And I think that's a big point of you know, not only the aspect of building your team internally and making sure that there's trust within your team and within your leadership, but also with the customers, with the buyers that you're working with. And that's really an important piece of this that I want to touch on quickly.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. And what we'll have to do, guys, we'll have to bring it back another time. We're out of time. I want to say, you know, it's been a blast having both Ryan Jeffrey and Armin Ghosh here on the show. And it's 11 Ronin. And what's the website? Is it 11ronin.com?
Yep, it's just 11ronin, R-O-N-I-I-N.com, 11ronin.com.
11ronin.com. Ryan, Armin, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
Thank you so much. Great being on the show.
Good stuff there. Good stuff there from Ryan and Armin Ghosh, 11ronin. You know what? I think there's actually a fairly famous movie with De Niro that's 11 Ronin or something Ronin, right? Definitely has Ronin in the title. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. You know, first of all, I want to say thank you so much to you, our loyal listeners, who spend hours of your week listening to us. Your time is so valuable, and I appreciate it so much. And my next guest is going to help us get more time. John Barrett is an author, speaker, and coach who specializes in training individuals and organizations to increase their ideas, influence, income, and impact. You can get his resources, a free ebook, How to Get More Time, and follow his blog at John Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T, blog.com. John Barrett, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Bert. I'm glad to be on air with you and looking forward to today.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing, this whole thing about time, because time is the one thing that kind of makes us all even. We both have, both you and I, no matter what our strengths and weaknesses are, we still have the same amount of time every day. We have 24 hours, and how we use that time really impacts the people around us, impacts our lives, impacts our legacy, right? I mean, this idea
that's right.
of time, that's the one thing that you and I cannot make more of.
That's right. Well, you know, and you're right, it's a level playing field. We all wake up with the exact same opportunity to create the life that we want to create in terms of how we use our time. But yet, there's so many different levels of this, aren't there? There's people that use it great. There's people that don't. You know, I remember years ago, we were going on a vacation with my family, and we were packing up, and we had a big suitcase. And I was just used to throwing things into the suitcase just really quick and not folding it and just throwing it in there. And then my wife was so much more articulate about packing it. And she was able to get so much more in the suitcase because she packed it well, as where I just threw it all in. And we all have the same size suitcase. We all face the same amount of time each and every day. But based on how we pack that time, how we utilize that time, and how intentional we are about it, we're either going to get a lot in that time or we're not going to get a lot out of it. And I found that there's just different kinds of people when it comes to time, aren't there?
Yeah, you know, what a great analogy. I'm going to use that suitcase analogy. I will give you credit at least once, and then after that, it'll,
right.
you know. But that's a great analogy. Think about that. Everybody
yeah.
can relate to that. You know, it's so amazing because there are so many people – who, again, the same 24 hours, man, they can't manage their way out of a paper bag. And then there are some people that 24 hours, man, they do so very, very much. It's just amazing. And again, the nice thing about it is that, A, we can learn those skills. We're in control of that. It just all depends about our desires to do that. Let's talk about some of these other things, you know, some of these leadership myths. You know, obviously time is very critical, how we use time. But what is your take? What are some of the leadership myths that we've come to believe that end up holding us back? What is your take on that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think when it comes to being a great leader, you know, we've grown up with these myths that we believe, we've come to believe throughout the years, whether it's we've had a certain example as a leader that maybe taught us the wrong things, or maybe even, you know, we've grown up to believe these kind of myths that really hold us back. Here's some leadership myths that I think are huge. Number one is that we have this myth that leaders are superheroes, meaning that they are just, you know, they're a cut above the rest. There's something unique and special. They were born with superhuman abilities, and you know, everybody else was left out. But the truth is this, is that there's no such thing as a Lone Ranger, a Rambo, a Superman, a Batman, all these heroes. You know, there's no such thing as that. And when you believe that myth, that you've got to be an unbelievable, outstanding, better than everybody else, perfect person, you're going to miss out on being able to influence people. Because here's the key, is that it's not that leaders are superheroes, it's that they understand how to build a super team. And when you can build a super team, you can begin to do super things. But there's no such thing as doing it on your own. And it's a myth, because here's the deal. We think that, well, man, if I'm going to grow my business, if I'm going to make a difference, if I'm going to be the best at what I do, it's all up to me. I've got to pull up the bootstraps. I've got to be amazing. And what we do is we buy into that myth, and then we get discouraged, because nobody can live up to that, because not one person can do everything. Great leaders have great teams, period. That's how they become great.
Absolutely. You know what?
Yeah.
And I want to kind of throw this example out there. We, you know, earlier in the show, we talked about Steve Jobs. Well, look, Steve Jobs is credited for creating the iPod and the iPhone and this and that, and including but not limited to the Apple computer. Well, you know, if you dig a little bit deeper, he helped those products. But he didn't invent them or create them from scratch, right? His team did. He got the credit.
Yes.
But his team came up with that. And, yes, he had input. What's this guy's name? Edison. Edison, you know, he's famous because he created 100 inventions in, like, 30 years. That wasn't all him. That was his
team.
At one point, Tesla – worked Edison and created a couple of things that Edison patented, and that's, you know, and Tesla ended up leaving Edison to his own thing. A lot of us, and I'm using these extreme examples because I think really magnify what you're talking about. These guys are held as superheroes, and that's the myth. The reality is they have, as you said, super teams that help him get these results.
Yeah. Well, and you've got to have a great team. I mean, you know, I did a blog post the other day, and it was based on the science of, you know, two horses can pull about 9,000 pounds together. And you would think that if you put four horses together, you could pull 18,000 pounds. Well, the fact is they can pull over 30,000 pounds together. And it's that teamwork doesn't just double your effort, it absolutely multiplies and compounds your effort.
Yes, absolutely. You know, in the right team environment, you could see it. You could see people who are on the same page, they're helping each other, they're pushing each other, they're, you know, you could see how it would double, triple, quadruple the productivity.
That's right. Well, that synergy takes place.
What's that?
That synergy takes place.
That synergy
takes
place. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. You know, you've got that collective force, and it compounds. You literally snowball your productivity. It's not that you just add to it, and boy, that would be nice to have a good team. No, this is a necessity if you want to snowball your impact and your increase in your organization and whatever it is that you're doing. Teamwork is the name of the game.
All right, so let me ask you this. John, do you have any ideas or suggestions when you're trying to build your super team? How do you start to build a super team? What are some of the mistakes that we should avoid? Go ahead.
Sure. Well, one of the biggest mistakes we make is that we build our teams around like strength people. And what I mean by that is that we tend to go, we gravitate towards people that are like us and think like us and have our same giftings because we connect with them. And so what happens is that we're drawn to them, but we don't strengthen our weaknesses. We don't create a diverse team that is able to really delegate our weaknesses. If you're strong in an area, then you stay in that area and you be strong in it, and you raise up other people in your weaknesses and let them shine in their strengths. So you've got to outsource your weaknesses. So the biggest, I think, hurdle that we face is that we tend to gravitate towards people that are just like us, when in reality, we've got to surround ourselves with people that yes, are like us in terms of values and in terms of vision and in terms of desire and work ethic, no doubt, but we've got to diversify our strengths. Otherwise, we're going to get so lopsided in one thing that we're going to miss out on the holistic picture. So the biggest mistake is that we gravitate towards the same strengths, and we've really got to raise up people that have opposite strengths than we do so that we can become a really, really good team. If you got a team of Michael Jordans, you don't need a whole bunch more point guards, do you? You want to surround yourself with some great centers, some great forwards, and you want to have a good team to go to. So I think that's huge, because I think that a lot of people tend to just hire people that are like them, or maybe they're even friends with, but in terms of being a team, you know, a group of people isn't a team. A group of people is just a group of people. A team is when you come together and you all are adding something vital to the whole picture of what you're going after. So I think that's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. I was going to say, I hope everybody picks up on that. Could you imagine if you're a social individual who's highly creative and your team is full of social people that are highly creative, you're going to have a lot of fun, you're going to have great ideas, and you're not going to get anything done.
That's right. Or you're going to get something done, but it's going to be the same thing over and over. You're never going to break out of the box because you all think the exact same way. You all problem solve the exact same way. And so what happens is that you limit yourself from ever experiencing something bigger or new or different, because you tend to get into a rut because you all are just alike.
Yes, absolutely correct. And here, you know, and I hope that everybody picks up on this, because this is so huge. Look, a lot of entrepreneurs, and I'm sure, John, you talked about this, one of the things that we all have to do is we got to get out of our comfort zones. Well, that goes to personalities and people's skills as well, right? If you, again, are an introvert, and introverts really tend to shy away from people who are social butterflies, who are loud and creative, and they're like, oh, my gosh, this guy's talking a mile a minute, and get him away from me. Well, if you're an introvert, maybe you need a social butterfly in your team, not your group.
That's right.
I like that distinction. It's not a group of people. It's a team. And so if you're familiar with there are a lot, what do they call them, these personality tests, you know, DISC profiles.
Yep.
This is the best way, in my experience, to build a team. And you get somebody who is social. So you get somebody who's a driver. You get somebody who's analytical. You get somebody who tends to nurture everybody, and you put this team together based on everybody's strengths, and all of a sudden now you have a team versus a group of people.
That's right, and that's vital, because you only go as far as your team can take you. And so if your team is limited by the same strengths or the same way of doing things over and over and over. You've got to break that comfort zone, as you said, and break that box so that you can begin to diversify. And I want to make a distinction here because I think, you know, you diversify your team in terms of strengths, but don't diversify your teams in terms of values and vision and work ethic and chemistry. I think we get confused. We think, well, diversity means that I got to go find people that I don't like and people that think differently and I don't work with them well, but that's what I'm supposed to do. No. Diversify your strengths, not your chemistry. Your chemistry needs to all be there. You need to be a team. You need to work together, but you've got to diversify the strengths and the skills on your team very, very much so.
Yeah, so I like that distinction. Yeah, listen, you have to hire people you like. You have to hire people you trust. Those are essential things that you cannot, negotiate on. You know, there's nothing worse than hiring somebody who you don't like or you don't trust, but you think, man, I got to keep him because he's going to make me money. That's you missed the boat. You're going to get ripped
That's
off.
Right.
You're going to have them. Sooner or later, you're going to fire them or whatever. It's going to be bad. So start with that.
Set yourself up for failure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I like what you said that about chemistry. You know, it's essential. Those things are essential. And, you know, but again, you know, you have to definitely look at hiring outside of your normal strengths. And I like the fact that you focused on that because I think it is something that a lot of people just – we naturally gravitate to people that are like us, and again, it just isn't the best formula for success. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. When it comes to, I want to go back to what we started the segment with, which is talking about time. In your ebook, How to Get More Time, can you pluck a couple of cherries, if you will, a couple of little nuggets. How can we get more time?
Yeah, well, you know, the kickoff of the book, I talk about there's three kinds of people when it comes to time. And again, we talked about it earlier. Everybody faces the same day, the same amount of time, same 24 hours. Nobody gets lucky and gets more. Nobody gets gypped and gets less. But here, how we approach it, there's three different kinds of people that I've found. One is people that are a victim of their time. They're being slaughtered by their time. They have the inability to say no. They're not intentional with their time at all. They're literally just a victim of their time. They end their day and they're going, what happened to this day? I don't even know. And of course, we want to get out of the victimized of being victimized by our time. But the second group of people, and this is where we kind of get stuck, is people that are a manager of their time. And we've heard the term that you need to manage your time, and we use that in a very positive sense, and maybe it is, but managing your time is not the fullest level that you can get to. Managing of your time is good, but managing just means that you're keeping your head above the water, you're taking it in what's coming, and you're shuffling it around, and you're kind of making it work. And that's good, but it's not great. The best person that you can be is a leader of your time. Not a manager, but a leader of your time. That means that you tell your time what it's going to do, you tell it where it's going, that you begin to get so intentional about your day that you're literally squeezing every ounce of potential out of that day. And so I encourage people, you know, in the book, I kind of unpack what does it mean to be a leader of your time, what are some principles that you can follow. Of course, a lot of it is just about being intentional, right? It's all about approaching your day with a plan, with a map. I kind of have a system where I call time mapping, where just if you were going to go out on a trip and you were going to, go out and go on a hike or maybe go to, you know, another country for a week and you only had a week to do it, if you want to get the most out of it, you better get a plan. You better get a map out. You better figure out where you want to go to your checkpoints, when you need to be there, when it's going to happen. And our day is no different. In fact, it's probably even way more important than a vacation or something because we want to get the most out of life. But we've got to be a leader. That means we've got to be intentional. We've got to
I got to cut you off there. We'll end on that note. Yep. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by because we're out of time. John
Absolutely.
Barrett, appreciate you. We'll have you back again. We'll talk some more.
Okay. Thanks, Bert. I appreciate it. It's great being here.
You bet. Good stuff there from John Barrett. How to build a team successfully. Great tips on time management, time leadership. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.